Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I'd go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed, you laughed, and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet, and when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, to the happy home with trees and flowers.
That's from 1966, Napoleon the 14th, ranked number 2 on the top 10 list of the scariest songs ever made, here in the spirit of Halloween. It is Sunday, October 24th, 2010. I am the Solemn Monster here with Sound Off 131 on Bragging Rights Sunday, the big WWE, well, not so big WWE pay-per-view tonight, which will probably be in the books by the time you listen to this, but just to give a quick rundown, of course, the Buried Alive match between Kane and The Undertaker for the World Heavyweight Championship highlights the show. John Cena will be in the corner of Wade Barrett as he challenges Randy Orton for the WWE Championship. And the big Team Raw versus Team SmackDown 7-on-7 bout for bragging rights, and really not much else. So that's the those are the main matches on the show tonight. Some bigger news on a bigger pay-per-view from this weekend. We're going to start here with some UFC news. And it's not so much about the UFC pay-per-view itself as much as what happened after the show. Now, for those of you who don't know, former WWE champion, and up until last night, UFC heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar had a big fight with Cain Velasquez last night, UFC 121 from the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. Probably going to be a pay-per-view that, if it doesn't hit a million pay-per-view buys, it'll certainly come close. Brock Lesnar has been the biggest pay-per-view draw that there is, certainly for UFC and really in general, now that Floyd Mayweather is... Is Floyd Mayweather still retired? Well, either way, Mayweather doesn't really fight that much. So, in any event, big business for UFC last night, and Brock lost the championship in the main event to Cain Velasquez on a blood stoppage. Or he was bleeding. It may not have been a blood stoppage, but nonetheless, Cain Velasquez is the new UFC heavyweight champion, and the belief is that Brock Lesnar will rebound, and when he's good and ready to come back, he'll probably have a fight with Frank Mir, who he has fought before. And I believe Velasquez now is in line to defend the title against Junior Dos Santos at a future UFC pay-per-view. And that's all fine and good, but let's get to the real news here. The Undertaker was present at last night's UFC pay-per-view. Now, The Undertaker is a big fight fan. He's a big UFC fan, has been for many years. You know, when his character evolved and he started wearing the fighting gloves and he incorporated the Go-Go Plata submission, which he calls Hell's Gate, into his repertoire. It's all mixed martial arts related stuff because he's a big fan and he's been present at a lot of these pay-per-views before. Now, it was interesting to see The Undertaker interviewed after the show. Ariel Helwani of AOL Fan House interviewed him from cage side, and Undertaker was there. The video is up, as many of you have seen. It's on YouTube. It's on AOL. I even posted a link to it very early this morning / late last night. On my Twitter and my Facebook. So all the people who emailed me in the last couple of hours to alert me to this news as though I was not aware of it clearly are not Twitter followers or Facebook friends, so a pox on you, I say. But in the video, Ariel is interviewing Undertaker. Michelle McCool, kind of funny. She's kind of just standing there. She looks very lost in the background. And Undertaker is talking about how he was very surprised by how the fight went down. He expected Brock to come on stronger and to... I presume he expected Brock to win. He didn't actually say that, but it looked like Undertaker was a little lost for words. He wasn't expecting Brock to get beaten down the way that he was. Then about 40 seconds into the video, Brock Lesnar comes walking by. Lesnar, I guess, was only then was he being escorted out of the arena and back to the locker room. And on his way out, he literally walked right by The Undertaker. And as he does so, The Undertaker looks up at him and mouths the words, "You want to do it?" I guess as though, you know, do you want to throw down? And Brock shoots him a death glare, just eyeball to eyeball, like these two guys are about to get it on. And Brock doesn't say anything. He doesn't blink. He just stares Undertaker down for about 3 or 4 seconds and keeps on walking. And Helwani asks Undertaker what he said. Undertaker doesn't want to talk about it. He says it's personal. And Ariel asks him if the two of them are cool. And Undertaker says it's personal. So this was all very interesting and very, very unexpected. It was interesting enough just to see The Undertaker dressed up in his American Badass biker garb. He was wearing the bandana. He looked like The Undertaker transplanted out of the year 2002 or 2003, which was kind of cool to see him out of his character for a change and out of his element, considering he'll be right back in character tonight at the pay-per-view and perhaps will win the World Championship. I don't expect him to, but I suppose stranger things have happened. But this is all interesting in that everybody is speculating, what does this mean? What is this, a work? Are these two guys really, you know, friendly, but they're just kind of throwing the wool over everyone's eyes and just kind of screwing around? Or is there some sort of legitimate personal beef between Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker? Now, when Brock Lesnar was coming up in WWE back in 2002, he won the World Championship at SummerSlam. He beat The Rock clean as a sheet at the Nassau Coliseum, won the Undisputed title. And his very first feud after becoming champion was with The Undertaker. He had a pay-per-view match with him at Unforgiven that had one of the most horrendous finishes you'll ever see on a pay-per-view, to the point that the people practically booed the two of them out of the building. It was one of these, I remember it was one of these deals where these guys were punching the hell out of each other and rolling around, and the referee tried to break them up, and he couldn't, so he just called the match off. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. And so they followed up the month after that at No Mercy with a Hell in a Cell match. Now, I remember that Hell in a Cell match being a very, very bloody affair that Brock Lesnar won. So, essentially, Undertaker helped put Lesnar over in that feud and made him look very strong in his first few months as the world champion. Now, you'll see different websites and different news sources and some very reputable wrestling news sources claiming that there is legitimate heat between the two of them going back to 2004, when Brock left WWE to pursue a career in the NFL, which obviously never panned out, and ultimately Brock got into mixed martial arts. And the claim there, the belief there, is that Undertaker was scheduled to be in a program with Brock shortly after he made his big return. You may remember at WrestleMania 20, that's when Undertaker came back as the Dead Man and beat Kane for the second time at WrestleMania. And I presume that after that, there was going to be an Undertaker-Brock feud, and Brock, I guess, was going to return the favor to Undertaker, who had helped put him over 2 years earlier. This is the first I'm hearing of this. I've never read that before. I've never heard that before. I don't know that it makes a whole lot of sense timeline-wise to me, but that came from PW Insider. That's what they claim. Who am I to doubt them? I'm not saying they're lying. I'm just saying that this is the first I've ever heard of there being heat between the two of them because Brock left and didn't return the favor, so to speak, to The Undertaker. So that's one school of thought. The other school of thought, which seems to be picking up some steam, is that this is all a ploy on the part of Vince McMahon and WWE to try to get Brock Lesnar in for a WrestleMania match with The Undertaker. And there seems to be a growing, you know, this rumor, which is all it is at this point, seems to be growing louder and louder. It could be true. I'm not saying it's not true. But again, just to douse the flames here a little bit, Brock Lesnar is under contract to UFC. I don't know for how many more fights. But he's under a UFC contract. And there is no way that Dana White would ever allow Brock or anybody else while under UFC contract to sign a contract and wrestle for Vince McMahon in WWE. Or even TNA. It's just not going to happen. I mean, Dana White was interviewed by Ariel Helwani after the show last night, after everything went down. I guess Dana had no idea what happened. He was asked about it. So he didn't really have a whole lot to say about it, but I'm sure that he wouldn't have been too happy about it. So is Vince McMahon trying to put together a WrestleMania match next year between Undertaker and Brock Lesnar? It sounds like they want that match. And I'm positive that WWE would absolutely love to have Brock Lesnar back, even just for one big WrestleMania showdown, be it with The Undertaker or anybody else. And in my mind, if they could put that match together, WrestleMania next year is going to go from perhaps being much like this year's WrestleMania was, to be honest with you, a pretty basic show, maybe with one big match, to a show that could do some really, really big business. Maybe the biggest business that WrestleMania has done since the Trump show back in 2007. Because Brock Lesnar is a bona fide, even with his loss last night, he is a bona fide pay-per-view draw. He's a great heel. People want to pay money to see him fight. They want to pay money to see him lose, which is exactly what happened last night. But one loss is not going to kill the guy. There's still potentially big business in Brock coming back to WWE for a match. I cannot envision a scenario where this happens. I mean, obviously, does Brock want to do it? That's the bigger question. Would Brock want to go back to wrestling? He's never officially closed the door on it, but he's still in the prime of his career. And you would think that after losing the way he lost last night, the first thing and the only thing on Brock Lesnar's mind is going to be training to get back in the octagon and avenge that loss. And not, you know, kind of taking the money and running over to WWE, PG WWE, mind you, to do a match at WrestleMania where, let's be honest, Brock Lesnar is not beating The Undertaker at WrestleMania. He'd have to be doing the job and putting over Undertaker. Because you're not going to jeopardize the streak. And even without the streak, if they're bringing Brock in for one match, it doesn't make sense to bring him in for one match, pay him a shitload of money, and have him go over your own talent. It doesn't make any sense. So right now, we don't know anything beyond that. I mean, nobody has said anything. Like I said, this could be Brock and Undertaker as friends, just, you know, fucking around at the pay-per-view and getting everybody talking, which, if that's what they did, congratulations, because they certainly got everybody talking. I mean, I've been getting a lot of messages about it. I watched the video myself, and it was a little tense. It was an uncomfortable moment, and I just I remember watching that and thinking to myself, that was odd. So yeah, there you go. WWE is trying to put together a WrestleMania match, but I don't know how realistic that is. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Brock Lesnar has not said anything yet. Paul Heyman, who is his closest confidant and was at the pay-per-view last night, Heyman hasn't said anything about it. But the thought of Brock Lesnar, even for one match, coming into WWE as this huge monster, and physically Brock is not the monster physically that he used to be. I mean, Brock, and when I say jacked up, I'm not saying he was on steroids, but Brock was a big jacked up dude with thick, broad shoulders. And Brock Lesnar is still a very big, very scary individual, but he's actually smaller than he was at his peak in WWE. But the idea that this monster could come back, perhaps even managed by Paul Heyman, what an image that would be. That would be something else, but we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. So that's the whole Brock Lesnar Undertaker thing. It really wasn't much more than that from last night, but that's what happened. Let's talk about this Stand Up for WWE campaign. I've been asked about this all week long. I've seen the commercials. I've seen the Vince McMahon YouTube videos, which are hilarious. I've seen the logo. I've seen the Facebook page. And no, I'm not going to like their Facebook page. This is one of the more transparent campaigns that WWE has ever put on. I mean, it's transparent enough when they put together these 5-minute long video packages, patting themselves on the back for all the great charity work they do with the troops and the Make-A-Wish stuff. And that's all great. I think that's fantastic that WWE does that. And, you know, it's I'm not saying they shouldn't mention it every now and then. I mean, some people do things like that and don't want to have their names mentioned. And that's fine, too. But when you do a 5-minute long video package and you put it on all of your TV shows, and Linda McMahon, the wife of the senior executive of World Wrestling Entertainment, just so happens to be in the throes of a senatorial race where she's trying to get elected, it's a little more than transparent. So anyway, the stand-up for WWE bullshit, which started at the beginning of the week, is the brainchild of Vince McMahon. Because I can assure you, Linda McMahon's campaign is none too happy about this. It's stirred up a lot of controversy as far as whether or not her campaign is in collusion with WWE, which would be against the law. The Democrats want an investigation opened. The fact is, whether or not it's true, all this does is create an air of scandal around Linda McMahon, which is not what she needs when she's about 15 to 20 points behind Dick Blumenthal in the polls. So this election is coming up fast, which is phenomenal. I just cannot wait for this election to be over. I live in New York, and I can't vote in the Connecticut race, but you have what they call the tri-state area, which is New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. We're all kind of lumped in together here. So I've been subject to all of these Linda McMahon and Dick Blumenthal campaign ads now on TV for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it's only getting worse. Every time I put the television on, it's just beyond aggravating. And I just, when this election is over, whether she wins or loses, I'm going to do a dance of joy. You know, Balky from the old Perfect Strangers TV show, I'm going to do the dance of joy because I just can't take any more of these ads. Now, I don't want Linda to win. If I had, for those of you interested in knowing, well, who do I want to win? And it's nothing to do with politics. I could give two shits about either one of these people. But I think if Linda wins, then it's bad news for WWE fans. Now, that's not to say that when Linda loses, and it looks like she will lose this race, that all of a sudden, PG WWE is going to get edgier. I'm not saying it can't happen, but anybody out there who thinks or is hoping that Linda McMahon loses so that the day after or the week after, all of a sudden WWE TV is going to get better, keep dreaming. It doesn't work that way. I mean, they were doing PG even before Linda began running for Senate. That's not going to change, certainly not overnight. So I just want this race to be over, regardless of the outcome, so we can move on. Vince McMahon claims that WWE is wrongly being bashed by the elitist media. I will say this. I am not a fan of the way that the media portrays pro wrestling. You have a lot of journalists or so-called journalists, bloggers and whatnot out there who thumb their nose at pro wrestling and they make these stupid comments about it. In most cases, even the ones who are covering the election, you don't have to make stupid comments about WWE and its fan base having the IQ of a brick. And, people that live in their mother's basement are the only people who watch pro wrestling and this and that. Those are cheap shots that are unnecessary. It's a poor reflection of the person writing that bullshit. I agree 100%. You have plenty of media people out there with their heads so far up their asses, it's not even funny. And I will support people who are against journalists like that any day of the week. However, that being said, WWE and Vince McMahon, they bring it all on themselves. All of the stupid bullshit that we've seen on TV off and on over the years, whether it's Katie Vick or any number of the racist, homophobic, xenophobic storylines that this company has produced, going back even to the 80s with the Slickster eating a bucket of fried chicken on TV. Whatever it is, the Kamala, Saba Simba, any one of the Samoans having hard heads, Prime Time, Eddie and Chavo stealing things because, of course, they're Mexican. Every Asian star that comes along that has to have the same cymbal theme music and has to eat rice and no karate. All the bullshit. They brought it on themselves. I don't have any sympathy whatsoever for WWE when it comes to that. People who point that shit out are absolutely right. They're well within their rights to do that. Because wrestling has done some really stupid shit. Even in just the last couple of years. I'm not even talking about 25 years ago. So it kind of goes both ways. You have these elitist media morons out there who do exist and who do deserve to be silenced. And then you have Vince McMahon, who may be the biggest hypocrite of all in this entire thing. And the biggest hypocrisy of it all. Maybe this has changed since the beginning of the week. But I saw that first YouTube video that went up at the beginning of the week where Vince McMahon is filmed announcing the Stand Up for WWE campaign. And he's talking about how we want our fans to have their voices heard. We want you to write in through Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. And it was funny enough, by the way, seeing Vince McMahon utter the words Facebook and Twitter, which I'm almost positive he knew nothing about beforehand. What was great about this, and when I say great, I'm being facetious, is that in that very same video, and maybe they've changed it since then. I don't think they have. Comments on YouTube under that video where they wanted the fans to let their voices be heard. Comments were disabled. You cannot make this bullshit up. You just cannot. This coming from a man and a company who confiscates signs from fans every single week. I mean, the last Raw show that I went to was in November of last year. But I remember coming into Madison Square Garden, okay, their home base, New York City, with the loudest, quote-unquote, smartest fans in the world, and they're coming into the building, and as I'm coming in, I look off to my left, and I see a mound, just a mountain of signs that were confiscated from people before they even entered the building. It is just censorship to the max from a company that is always trumpeting the First Amendment and the First Amendment rights of its fans. For them to do shit like that and not even realize the hypocrisy of it, I'm not going to stand up for WWE. For those who have asked. I mean, I'm a WWE fan. I've been a WWE fan my whole life. I'm not going to be part of this stupid bullshit campaign. I mean, I go on that Stand Up for WWE Facebook page and I read some of the comments, which, by the way, some of those comments really do make wrestling fans look bad. Not all of them, but many of them do. But that aside, this is so transparent to me. I'm not going to be a part of it. I'm not going to like their Facebook page. I'm not going to comment on their Facebook page. I'm not going to record a video talking about why I'm standing up for WWE. This is all stupid, and I don't want to have any part of it. So, for those of you who have asked my thoughts on that whole campaign, now you know. It looks like Tough Enough might be on its way back to TV, which is actually a really good thing. When I read that at the beginning of the week, I was actually very happy with that news. No formal announcement has been made, but from what I understand, it's a done deal pretty much. It's just a matter of when the show is going to air. So it really looks like WWE is bringing back Tough Enough. And it looks like the genesis of this whole thing is that USA Network is looking to branch out for the first time into reality programming. USA, I think, is still the number one cable network. If they're not number one, they're probably neck and neck with TNT for number two. But they have a lot of original programming and a lot of great programming. I don't watch too much of it, but it does very well. People rave about the quality of the shows, and I guess they're just looking to do something other than dramas and comedies. So reality TV, I guess, would make sense. I'm not a big fan of reality TV, but the big question to me is, what format is this show going to take? You know, from the things I've read, it sounds like this show is going to be in tandem with Monday Night Raw. What does that mean? That could mean two things. It could mean, A, the show is going to air on Monday nights at 11 o'clock when Raw goes off the air, which is similar to how the Ultimate Fighter show got off the ground for UFC many years ago, which in and of itself has an interesting story. It was Spike. At the time when Raw was on Spike TV, the executives at Spike actually went to Vince McMahon. There was some sort of clause or provision in the contract that required exclusivity when it came to, sports entertainment programming on the network. They came to Vince, this is before UFC exploded in popularity, and wanted his permission. You know, Vince McMahon had the ultimate final say in whether or not UFC would be allowed on that network, and he said, sure, no problem. And we all know what happened after that. And it was the perfect time slot for The Ultimate Fighter because there's, no matter what Vince McMahon says, there is huge, huge, huge overlap between the WWE audience and the UFC audience. And the show took off. For an 11 o'clock show on a Monday night, it did phenomenal ratings. I don't know that a WWE third hour would do as well as what Ultimate Fighter did on Spike TV. In a way, I think it's overkill. It's kind of like the TNA thing, where you have 2 hours of Impact every Thursday, and no matter how good reaction may be at 11 o'clock, I don't really watch it, because I can barely stomach TNA in its normal time slot, let alone 3 hours of TNA on a Thursday night. It's not going to happen. And by the way, I have not seen reaction this week. I didn't see Impact. And I've heard good things about reaction, and Eric Bischoff went into detail about how the whole they storyline, the master plan unfolded, and they tried to make sense of certain things. And I can appreciate paying attention to little details. I just can't comment on it. I have the YouTube link somebody, I guess, posted a couple of parts on YouTube of reaction. So I've got the links. I just haven't had time to watch it yet. But back to Tough Enough, that's one thing WWE can do. If USA is agreeable to it, they can have Tough Enough, half an hour, however long it is, immediately after Raw on Monday nights. And that would probably make sense. Or you can do it the way they did it in the final season, or whatever it was, the third or fourth season of Tough Enough, which aired as part of SmackDown on Friday nights. And basically you had your Tough Enough contestants, and they would have segments, live segments in the ring, in the arena, during SmackDown. To me, that's really fucking stupid. I don't want to see that. It just makes it feel like it's another part of every single weekly WWE show. It's no different. It doesn't have a special feel to it. It's just another TV segment. If I'm going to watch Tough Enough, I think the way to go is to do it the way they did it the first season. You know, whether you put them all in a house or whatever the case may be. On SoundOff 127, which was the episode where I gave my WWE business review on all aspects of business, the roster and television and pay-per-view and everything, I devoted... One of the things I devoted some time to was to revamping the NXT show. And I basically said, look, you know, I applaud UFC for making The Ultimate Fighter into a successful show. They've had 11 seasons or 12 seasons of that show. There's been good seasons, there's been bad seasons, but it's a working formula for UFC, and they produce some really formidable stars out of that show. You've had some people come from the early years of Tough Enough. John Morrison's probably the biggest example. The Miz would be another one. Maven, who flopped, but I thought Maven had a lot of potential, but you've had a lot of names that came from Tough Enough. UFC has seen the same thing with The Ultimate Fighter. And I said in that podcast, some of the best ideas in pro wrestling have been taken from other organizations or have just been outright stolen. So I have no shame in borrowing the same concept of The Ultimate Fighter and applying it to WWE NXT. And you can have one wrestler designated as a pro or a coach with a team of five. You have another WWE superstar appointed as the captain of their own five-person squad. You have an 8-week season or a 10-week season or a 12-week season with eliminations. You're showing them in their everyday settings, training, traveling. You give background on each person so we can get to learn a little bit more about them. You show them learning different moves. You have a panel of judges that will... You know, you'll have a match, let's say, at the end of each episode, and you have a panel of judges, whoever they may be. Maybe you have Jim Ross on the panel and Jerry Briscoe or Ricky Steamboat, whoever it is, critiquing the match put on by the two rookies at the end of each episode. And they're being judged on their working technique, on their promo ability. I mean, that's the idea that I would go with if I were running the show in WWE. So I don't know that that's the format that Tough Enough would take. So that's really the only question at this point, because it sounds like a done deal. It sounds like USA wants the show. They've reached an agreement, and it's just a matter of when and not if. Now, what that means for NXT, I don't think NXT is necessary if you're going to bring back Tough Enough. So this Diva season of NXT, and I hear people saying, oh, you know, this has been the best season ever of NXT. It's been a train wreck. My buddy the Zombie, Tim Morrison, actually made that comment again recently. I mean, me and him on episode 129 kind of disagreed about that. We went back and forth. I see the train wreck mentality. Michael Cole can be hilarious on that show. I mean, on the most recent episode of NXT, which we'll talk about in a second, during one of the matches, Cole actually had to take a cell phone call from his mother during the show. Came back to the announce booth and was loudly complaining about the fact that, is this match still going on? Cole is hilarious. Him and Josh Matthews work very well together. But again, it's a waste of a show. Why would anybody waste 60 minutes of their life watching that show? It's an abomination. As entertaining as it may be, it is so far removed from what the original intent of the show was that if you bring back Tough Enough, you don't have to do NXT anymore. It's pointless. Just don't do it. So we'll wait and see if we get an official press release from USA Network or WWE, which should be coming any day now, because like I said, it sounds like it's a done deal. Matt Hardy. Got to talk about Matt Hardy a little bit here. He's still posting videos. You would think he got his release and maybe he'd shut up a little bit, but no, he's still posting YouTube videos. I think he's doing them daily now. So it's no secret that Matt Hardy is going to go to TNA. I think Stevie Wonder could see that. It's just a matter of when. Again, does he have a 90-day clause or not? I think in one of the videos he did, he was in character. He was in his Matthew character, and he made mention that he doesn't have the 90-day clause, which I think is bullshit. I could be wrong about that. Maybe at the next set of TNA tapings or the next pay-per-view, he'll be a surprise run-in. He'll show up. I'm guessing we're not going to see him until the beginning of 2011 in TNA. In the meantime, he's got a lot of free time on his hands, which can be very, very dangerous. And in one of the videos he did this past week, he was staring into the camera. I don't know if he was in his bathroom or what. And he's addressing his Mattitude followers and saying that people have suggested that to I guess, rebut and refute the stories and the rumors that are perpetuated by the wrestling media and the internet wrestling community, that Matt should start his own wrestling news website to compete with the so-called dirt sheets. Can you just imagine a wrestling news site like PW Insider or the Wrestling Observer or SE Scoops that was run by Matt Hardy? Would any of you listening to this show believe anything that would come from that website? You see, Matt could do something like that if he wants to. He could certainly do something, and it would be unique. It would be unique to have an actual pro wrestler, an active pro wrestler, start his own wrestling news website. It's an intriguing idea. The problem is this. Matt Hardy has zero credibility. All of these bullshit videos and all of the bullshit tweets have absolutely killed any shred of credibility he may have had left. So if he wants to do something like that, by all means, lots of luck. But it ain't gonna work. And he needs to stop worrying about what the dirt sheets think of him and just worry about himself and rehabbing his own image. Because from what I've read, there are people in TNA, even people that know him and would consider themselves friends of his, even they kind of shake their heads whenever he puts a new video up. And they're wondering what the fuck is going on in this guy's head. So I guess when MattHardyScoops.com goes live, we'll mention it here. And I will say this, if Matt Hardy does at some point start up his own website, I will devote an entire episode of The Sound Off to reviewing his website and all of the news items that are on it. Should make for an interesting show. So let's recap Raw a little bit here. It's only fair, being that I went off on Impact last week, which was an atrocious show, that I should do the same for Raw, which was also a shitty show this week. I thought Raw was much better last week. And again, it wasn't that the whole show was great, but there were things on that show that I really liked, like the Sheamus-Daniel Bryan match, and I thought the Cena Wade Barrett stuff at the end was really, really good. Not so much this week. The show started off with a big showdown between the members of Team Raw and Team SmackDown. And if ever there was an indicator that this pay-per-view tonight, as I record this show, Bragging Rights is tonight, that this show is going to just fucking tank, this was it. The collection of talent in that match, aside from, I guess, Edge and Sheamus and maybe Big Show, is just appalling. Mark Henry is off of Team Raw. Unfortunately, he's still dealing with personal issues. He was on Raw Monday night, but his brother, who is still in the hospital, I think after having suffered a stroke about 2 weeks ago, he's still in bad shape, and I guess he can't give a full 100% commitment that if, God forbid, something were to happen this weekend, that he would be able to be at the pay-per-view. So they basically replaced Mark Henry in that match with the returning Ezekiel Jackson, who is back on Raw, I presume as a babyface, although it wasn't made entirely clear. So that's Team Raw, Team SmackDown. They went at it, and they made a match at the end of the show between Big Show and The Miz, which ended up turning into a Battle Royal. Now, I could have sworn that we just had a Battle Royal about 2 weeks ago on Raw. And it was even a Battle Royal recently on Impact. So now we have our third Battle Royal in about, 3 weeks? And this was a pretty shitty Battle Royal as far as Battle Royals go. I don't hate on Battle Royals as much as some people do. I actually kind of like them, but not this one. Big Show and Edge survived. It means nothing. This match at the pay-per-view means nothing. There really is nothing on the line. You have the poor excuse of a Stanley Cup trophy that they have. Nobody possibly cares about the trophy. There's nothing on the line. There's no, you know, somebody wrote in last week with the idea of home field advantage with a winning team. Their brand title will get the honor of being defended in the main event of WrestleMania next year. And then there's, you know, maybe putting a draft pick on the line or something, but there's nothing. So the Battle Royal sucked. Cena teamed up with Randy Orton. They both threatened each other before the match, which is important to remember for what happened afterwards. They had a match with Michael McGillicuddy, who has to change his name, and Husky Harris, who was looking even huskier than I remember him, but I love the guy. I think I love the guy because he just looks so much different than anybody else on the show. It's kind of the reason I liked Trevor Murdoch at first when he first came in to WWE. And, you know, he got a little bit of a push, and him and Lance Cade won the tag belts, and then it just all went to shit. But I like Husky Harris, and again, people backstage seem to like him too, so that's good for him, for now. Anyway, Cena and Orton win their tag team match, and the Nexus comes out, beats up Randy Orton. Wade Barrett tells John Cena to get his ass out of the ring and stand and watch the beatdown, which he does. And Barrett eventually orders Cena into the ring to give Orton an attitude adjustment. Then he changes his mind, and he says, tell Cena to give Orton back to him, and he gives Orton his finishing move, and John Cena looks like his dog just died. Now again, mind you, him and Orton, who have had a blood feud the last couple of years, Michael Cole has gone so far on commentary in the past as to call this one of the best feuds of this or any generation, which is appalling on so many levels. But anyway, they've had a blood feud now for many years, and they just threatened to... I think Orton threatened to kick him in the skull, and Cena said that if he tried it, he would break his leg off. And for whatever reason, John Cena was just devastated at the fact that he was unable to help Randy Orton in this attack. Whatever. The Hart Dynasty had a match earlier in the show against the tag team champions Cody Rhodes and Drew McIntyre. It looked like the Harts had the match won, and inexplicably, Harry Smith had Drew, up for the heart attack. And Tyson Kidd was positioning himself on the apron to deliver the move, and inexplicably, David Hart Smith puts Drew McIntyre down and tries to put him in a sharpshooter, I think is what happened here. One thing led to another. They lost. Drew McIntyre gave him the DDT and beat him, and they teased more dissension in the ranks of the Hart Dynasty, only this time it wasn't David Hart Smith who was being teased for a potential heel turn. It was Tyson Kidd who walked off on his partner, but he was smiling. He was grinning as he walked off, and they leading you to believe that perhaps Tyson Kidd would be the one turning heel, which I don't believe is what is supposed to happen here, so I guess that was a swerve. But again, it should have come as a shock to nobody that the Hart Dynasty was losing because they were in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, for Raw this past Monday night. Much like the week prior when Daniel Bryan lost to Sheamus. He was in his hometown, and we all know how that goes. Well, you saw it 2 weeks in a row. And by the way, I understand why they didn't put Bret Hart on TV and that they had a lot of shit to promote. In fact, they had three different things to promote on Monday night. They had to promote the pay-per-view, bragging rights. They had to promote the stand-up for WWE bullshit. And they had to promote Big Show's new movie, Knucklehead, which is in theaters this weekend only. So if you have not yet seen Knucklehead in theaters, you're up shit's creek because it'll be out of theaters in the next couple of hours. So they had three things to promote, and all the commercials and everything. They only had so much time. But still, you're in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Bret Hart was out of WWE for, what, 12 years? And he came back on January 4th in Dayton, Ohio. Now, all due respect to the people of Dayton, Ohio, if I had to book Bret Hart to return, I would not have booked it for Dayton, Ohio. Granted, he did win the King of the Ring there in 93, so he has some history there. But in all the months that Bret's been back, he has not been to Calgary. I mean, Calgary is synonymous with Bret Hart. So they finally have a live Raw in Calgary, and Bret's in the building, and they don't put him on TV. I don't understand that. How would it really have taken that much time to put him on TV? Have him come down with the Hart Dynasty. Just give him an entrance. Have him come down with the Hart Dynasty. I mean, the Hart Dynasty match was, what, 3 minutes anyway? He got the biggest pop of the night. Bret did come out, but he came out after the show for the dark match main event to be a referee. And apparently, and I saw the video on YouTube, the place went absolutely fucking bonkers for Bret Hart, which should come as a surprise to absolutely nobody. But that's a moment that should have been on TV. And I think they had their cameras recording it, so I'm sure there'll be some sort of DVD at some point in the future, and they'll probably stick that on there as an extra. But I thought that was a really bad move. They should have put Bret's return to Calgary on TV, and maybe that would have helped the show a little bit, because like I said, there was nothing special on this show. When it was over, I thought it was a shitty show. Speaking of shitty shows, got to talk a little bit about NXT here. Our good buddy Corey sent in another report, and you may remember that Corey last week made a comment at the end of his report that he thought NXT, since it went off TV, and became exclusive to WWE.com, he felt that the show might actually be getting better. And I think my comment was, I'll take your word for it. I wasn't buying basically what Corey was selling. Well, Corey's tune has changed a little bit this week after this week's episode. The only thing that really needs to be mentioned here is the match between Caitlin and Maxine. And I'm just going to read the word for word. I'll read what Corey wrote here for this match. Solo Monster, there are no words to describe the horror of this match. It was without a doubt the worst match I've ever seen. It was botched move after botched move. At one point, there was a small package, and I didn't even recognize the move. Josh had to tell me what it was. It ended with the worst sunset flip ever. Maxine performed the move, but Caitlin overshot it, and then Maxine had to catch her and roll her back on her shoulders to mercifully make the pin and end the match. So Maxine wins. I forgot to mention, both pros were mic'd up during the match, and if you thought that Lay Cool sucked when they were mic'd up, well, they looked like Jesse Ventura and Gorilla Monsoon compared to Alicia and Vicky. The worst segment of NXT ever. You have to go on YouTube and find it. Michael Cole actually called his mom in the middle of the match. It was pretty funny. And at the end of the report here, Corey says, remember last week when I said it was getting better now that it's been off TV? This episode erased that notion pretty quickly. Just a terrible, terrible episode of NXT. So I have to thank Corey for infinity for watching this show and submitting this report for us this week. It took a lot of guts, my friend, for you to do that. I watched the Caitlin-Maxine match on YouTube. It's one of those so-bad-it's-good kind of things. It ain't good. There's nothing good about this match. You feel sorry for them. This is not their fault. This is absolutely not Caitlin's fault. And I'm not just saying that because I think she's hot. Caitlin, I think Caitlin in particular had about a week of training before they put her on TV for NXT. They brought her in, they gave her a week of training, and they put her on television. I can't blame her for being shitty in this match. It's not her fault. And again, I go back to episode 127 of the show that I did, my little WWE review, and I talked about developmental, I talked about NXT. WWE should have taken these girls before they put them on the show and given them 2 or 3 months up in I don't know if it's in Calgary, it's up in Canada, with Lance Storm, who runs the Storm Wrestling Academy School. Just put them up there for 2 or 3 months and let Lance Storm, who did work with the Divas as an agent when he was with WWE a couple of years ago, let Lance Storm work with these women and teach them the basics. Don't just put them on TV, because at some point, it's not just going to be that they're having bad matches, it's going to be that they're going to break their neck. Corey talked about this awful attempt at a sunset flip. You know, bodies are flipping and flying in that ring, and all it takes is one wrong move, and Caitlin or Maxine or somebody can land on their fucking head. And that's not going to be funny when that happens. I'm going to be angry when that happens. So, as bad as this match was, I don't blame the women for this. I blame WWE. All right, we're going to get to some feedback here. First things first, I want to plug something before I do that. For those of you who have not seen it yet, I posted a countdown editorial of sorts, a special feature on SEScoops.com on the main page a couple of days ago, listing the top 12, ranked in no particular order, the top 12 spookiest superstars in wrestling history. Fun little column where I talk about some of the characters that have scared us for different reasons over the years, including Zeus and of course, Kane and The Undertaker. How can you leave them off a list like that? Papa Shango, Triple H, Brock Lesnar, who I talked about a little bit earlier, pretty much runs the gamut as far as the names on this list. So I think it's entertaining enough. So check that out if you have not already done so. The link, I don't think, has been stickied. I'm not sure why the webmaster has not stickied it after I asked him to. But scroll down and you can find it. If not, there's a link up on my Twitter and also on my Facebook page. In that little box on the left-hand side, there's a link to it there too. So check it out. And always don't forget that underneath that column and any of the posts on SEScoops.com, you probably have to sign up and register a free name, but you can leave comments under each post. So if you check that out, be sure to leave a comment underneath with your feedback. Speaking of feedback, let's get right into it here. Have a lot of it this week. We have Jeremy, who wrote in. Solomonster, we've been listening since episode 110 or so. While watching Impact on Thursday and Jeff Hardy came up to do his promo on the screen, I think this might have been Impact the week before that he's referring to, am I the only one that seemed to catch that it had the feeling of some old WCW Raven promos? Your thoughts? I did get that vibe. I don't think he pulled it off quite as well as Raven did, but he is making an attempt to be darker. Jeff Hardy is trying very hard to be a heel, and I can appreciate that. He certainly already has the freak look down with the different colored hair and the makeup and or face paint, whatever it is. What I would do if I were him, I would lock myself in a room and study Jake Roberts promos for about 24 hours straight. If you want to learn real wrestling heel psychology, it's the best piece of advice I could ever even think to give to somebody. So, I think I read a letter from last week from Luke, who wrote in about the Chris Jericho DVD and something called pillar boxing that he noticed, I guess, on his HDTV or on his computer. And I think I mentioned when I did my Jericho DVD documentary review last week, which, by the way, was a hearty thumbs up, that I didn't notice it, but I was watching it on a standard definition TV. So I went back, I put the DVDs into my laptop, and sure as shit, I see exactly what Luke was talking about, the pillar boxing, which it didn't bother me as much. It did bother me a little bit when I was watching some of the actual matches on disc 2 and 3. And it's just one of those things where it's not full screen. They kind of shrink it a little bit. And on the left side and the right side, it's just some weird background that stays static as the match plays in the middle of the screen. I find that to be unnecessary, and I agree. Hopefully they'll do away with that in the future. I don't know that they will unless people write into them and voice their displeasure. So if you feel as strongly about that as Luke does, I would say go to WWE.com's corporate site, look for the most appropriate email address, and then perhaps there's one there for their home video department, and I would write in and let them know. Jamie from Niagara Falls. Zalamasi, you talked about on your last podcast how Vince McMahon once had an idea to have a wrestling show without a ring, and it reminded him being Jamie, of an episode of South Park. Regardless if you're a fan of the show or not, I think you should check it out. It's called What the Fuck, or I guess WTF, and it's from season 13 of the show. The ironic thing is, with the show being a parody, it actually reminds me of an episode of Impact with the amount of talking they do. Ron writes in, "Dear Solo Monster, love the show, been listening since episode 80. Wanted to add another scary moment. It was New Jack killing Mass Transit in the ring. Devon Dudley was also in the match. You can find it on YouTube. I can't remember what show it was, but I can't even watch it anyway. I can't find it. Keep up the great work. I have something to listen to on Sunday nights." He didn't literally kill Mass Transit, although that kid did die several years later. I have seen the Mass Transit incident, and that is true. That was a pretty scary situation. If you're not familiar with it or you haven't seen it, they probably have an entire Wikipedia entry devoted to the damn thing. And I know the video used to be on YouTube. You could probably find it if you YouTube ECW Mass Transit incident. It's pretty gruesome stuff. Basically, I don't want to get into it, but look it up if you are interested in finding out more. So I mentioned last week during the mailbag that I literally did not get a single piece of feedback from anybody who had anything positive to say about Impact from last week. And I got a letter from Daniel, and in the interest of fairness, I told him that I would read it on the show, and that is exactly what I'm going to do. It says, "Hey, Solo Monster, just listened to Sound Off 130 and heard you say you didn't have any emails from anybody who thought Impact was good. I am in two minds about this past week's show. As a standalone episode of Impact, or for someone like you who is a casual viewer at best, the show was absolutely terrible. However, for me, somebody who watches Impact each and every week, I thought the show was great, as it really helped to continue the storylines post-Bound for Glory, and I cannot wait for Turning Point next month. Just thought I'd send you the views of someone who really enjoyed Impact last week. Keep up the good work." So, thanks to Daniel for sending that in. Like I said, I'm sure people enjoyed Impact. I just had literally not gotten a single email from anybody who really, truly liked that post-Bound for Glory show. Daniel did. He wrote in, and there you go. Brian writes in regarding NXT here. First, he says, "Solo Monster, I've been listening since episode 32. I'm a big fan. Love your podcast. I've been a wrestling fan off and on since about WrestleMania 5. For a while now, I have not watched on a consistent basis, but have stuck with you and SE Scoops to keep me updated on the world of pro wrestling. For whatever masochistic reason, I found myself watching the October 19th episode of NXT because it came up in my YouTube subscriptions. I thought, why not? If it's just too horrible, it's not hard to click on something else. While I agree it's a bad show, I actually found it to be an it's so bad it's good show. Simply put, the reason being the team of Michael Cole, Josh Matthews, and Matt Stryker. Their commentary all throughout the show I thought was freaking hilarious. While it may be a mistake to openly admit your show is terrible, yeah, I'll say, let's face it, NXT is a terrible wrestling show. Listening to the three of them make fun of it during each lame segment, lame after lame segment of the show, led to some hilarious commentary moments. I never thought I would say this, but Michael Cole stood out the most to me. I have not witnessed this new heel persona of his, but it is genius. Some of his commentary moments during the show reached, dare I say it, Bobby Heenan-level hilarity. I'm going to have to stop you there. I mean, that's like just spitting on Mother Teresa's grave right there, or tugging on Superman's cape. It's just something you shouldn't do. First of all, I like Michael Cole's heel persona in that it is entertaining. And that's something I could never say about Michael Cole before this. So again, you can question the logic of having your lead announcer be a heel. Doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. But again, they seem to be going somewhere with this. And Cole has been far more entertaining. However, Michael Cole is not even in the same universe as Bobby the Brain Heenan. So let us never again compare the two of them in the same sentence, shall we? Anyway, Brian goes on to say, all the best, long live the Sound Off. So thank you, Brian, for the NXT feedback. And to each their own, I suppose. Brett from Sydney, Australia writes in, had a couple of different questions here. Let's just take some of these different points here. He says, TNA is advertising Jeff Hardy versus Ken Anderson for the title at Turning Point. I could be wrong, but I thought that Anderson had to win the Ultimate X match with Kazarian to get the title shot. Well, that's TNA for you. Now that TNA has recycled the Warrior in the Mirror angle with Winter's debut, Winter's, of course, being Katie Lee Burchill, who made her TNA debut, what will they do next? Katie Vick, Mae Young giving birth to a hand, live sex celebration, or perhaps they can do that with Orlando Jordan and Eric Young. You are a sick man, my friend. And lastly, an actual good question here. Which former world champion has the worst WrestleMania record? I've got it as being Jeff Hardy, who is a three-time world champion in WWE, but has an 0-5 record at WrestleMania. If it wasn't for his problems leading to leaving WWE twice, they could have built to an Undertaker versus Jeff Hardy match, with Taker going for 20-0 when Jeff was looking at an 0-10 record. I guess that's a good question, because I don't know the answer. I haven't, I guess if I sat here and went through a list, I could probably figure it out. But perhaps somebody listening can do the research for us and let us know if perhaps it is Jeff Hardy or maybe it's somebody else. Steve wants to know my thoughts on the Ultimate X match on Impact. He says he thought it was the worst one they've done since TNA came up with the concept, especially considering the fact that it was only 6 minutes long. Add in the fact that they barely used the cables to try and grab the X, even though I understand them trying to see Anderson being injured. However, despite that, they used the wrong match to sell the separated shoulder. What are your thoughts? Well, I didn't see Impact, so I have no thoughts on it. I had no interest after the week before. I didn't watch it. I don't intend to go back and watch it. I'll probably just pick it up next week, and I guarantee you that if I watch Impact this week, having missed it last week, absolutely, it will make absolutely no difference whatsoever. But if you're telling me it was a bad match, I'm certainly not going to go back and watch it, so. And lastly, Dusty from Lincoln, Nebraska writes, Indir Salamasser, I've been dying to know why Vicky Guerrero has a job in WWE. I understand her character as a heel, but she doesn't come off as a good persona for TV. If I remember correctly, she didn't really start getting a persona until after Eddie Guerrero passed away. So I got curious if WWE is employing her due to something with Eddie's death. Am I right? And do you think she's good for WWE programming? So I answered Dusty directly, but it was a question worth mentioning here on the Sound Off. First of all, Vicky, as far as being a regular persona, did not become one until after Eddie's death. That is correct. However, she was on TV at least once as part of an angle, and that would have been at SummerSlam 2005, which was a couple of months before Eddie died. That was the ladder match that Eddie had with Rey Mysterio. What I tell Dusty is, you know, after Eddie's death, I believe Vince was still paying Vicky for some reason, and being that she had already started appearing sporadically on TV prior to his death, Vince perhaps felt that they should be using her on TV since they're already paying her, so they may as well get something out of her. What ended up happening was, you know, Vicky became the biggest heel in the entire company. I mean, she was god-awful at first, and even though now she's not, it's not like Vicky is the best actress on television or anything like that, but as a performer, she is light years ahead of where she was a couple of years ago. I mean, to this day, that woman garners more heat than anyone else on the entire roster. So, I think she's a great television persona. I disagree wholeheartedly with you. I mean, why do you think they linked her up with various people over the last couple of years? I mean, Eric Escobar didn't exactly work out, but that was hardly Vicky's fault. And Dolph Ziggler, obviously, is with Vicky now, the whole thing with him and Caitlin. And I have no problem with them using Vicky to try to help get some mid-card acts over. So if they use her in that capacity, even when she was the general manager of SmackDown, again, she got more heat than anybody else. She was just absolutely hated by people. I mean, most guys in that locker room would kill to get the kind of reaction that Vicky Guerrero got and still gets. So I have no problem with her whatsoever. I think she's turned herself into a very capable television performer, whereas a couple of years ago, I couldn't stand her. I thought she was terrible. I agree. I didn't know why they had her on TV, but I've become a Vicky Guerrero fan. So we're going to close up the mailbag for this week. Send in your questions. Keep sending them on in. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Solomonster. And on Facebook, friend me on there, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. Profile picture is the Solomonster Sounds Off logo, so it's pretty easy to find us on there. Had a new SE Scoops mailbag posted on Friday, and I think I might have even taken one or two questions from you guys to beef up the mailbag this week on the main page. So, again, if you have not checked that out, get on there. You'll see the mail, the little mail envelope icon. Click on that, check it out, leave comments underneath, and let me know what you think. And for those of you new listeners to The Sound Off, because we're getting new listeners every week, first of all, thank you for downloading the show and listening. Hopefully you'll enjoy it in some small way. And if you've missed any of the big shows that have been recorded recently, which I alluded to earlier, episode 127, you might want to go back in the archives and check that one out from a couple of weeks ago. It was a two-hour sound-off where I basically just gave my own overview of things that I would change, things that I would do, things that I would add, things that I would keep the same as far as WWE's overall business model. I think it was a little more interesting than it sounds, so you can go back and check that show out. I got great feedback to that one. And then episode 129 from a couple of weeks ago was a first for the sound-off. My exclusive interview with the arsonist, Tim Arson, better known as the ECW Zombie. Tim's a good guy. It was a great interview, over 40 minutes long, very entertaining, and a perfect theme with the zombie in time for Halloween. So if you missed episode 129 with the zombie, go back and check that out. Let me know what you think of that. And keep supporting the Sound Off. Spread the good word. Let your friends know. Really appreciate it. Again, check out the Spooky Superstars column on the main page, and we'll be right back here next week, episode 132, a special Halloween weekend edition of The Sound Off. That should be a good time. So until then, be well, stay safe, and let's all stand up for The Sound Off.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.